Namaham Sri Guru Tirthasaranam Sri Guru Vaishnavam Sram Sri Rupam Sadhidatam Sadhanaranatam Vidantam Satisham Sadhaitam Savadutam Vajana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Pada Sadhana Lita Sri Vishakam Vidam Sram Krishna Karna Sindhu Dila Bandhu Jagatpati Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namaste Sapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrinda Parameshwari Krishnanu Sri Devi Pranamami Shani Priyam Namo Mahavranyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishna Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gaurav Shri Namah జయ శ్రీకృష్ణ చైతన్య ప్రభు నిత్యానంద శ్రీ అద్వైత శివాసీ గౌరవృంద హరే కృష్ణ 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 హరే 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 రామ 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 హరే 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 కృష్ణ 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 హరే 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 రామ 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 హరే 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 కృష్ణ 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 హరే 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 రామ 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 హరే హరే I offer my respectful obeisances unto my spiritual master who has opened my eyes which are blinded by the darkness of ignorance with the torchlight of knowledge. Venerable Sri Rupa Goswami Prabhupada, who has established within this material world the mission to fulfill the desire of Lord Chaitanya, give me shelter under his lotus feet. Venerable Sri Rupa Goswami Prabhupada, ki jai. So usually when devotees read such purports, they feel this is so good. Because we think we are not on that side. We are on this side. But we have to really ask that question, whether we are really on this side. We feel, okay, this is, Prabhupada is really bombarding and blasting the materialist people, this materialistic world. So we really have to ask the question, very sincerely to ourselves, how much part of it are we in that? Are we really, really out of that? But still, reading this at least makes us realize, and at least makes us think that where we should be. So in the previous verse, actually Sutta Goswami is saying that it is explained that with every rising and setting of the sun, the duration of life is getting shorter. But at every moment, we are coming nearer to death. But for one who is utilizing his or her time in hearing and chanting the glories of the Supreme Lord, then with every rising and setting of the sun, he comes closer to the eternal life. So that is what is just explained in the previous verse. So here in this verse, actually, it's more of an argumentative verse from a materialistic point of view. So he said that today people consider very great to live long life. In fact, it's like an accomplishment if somebody is living more than 100 years. And people want to live long life, as Prabhupada says, as much as possible. In fact, they want to come under the idea of becoming immortal. Why? Because they just want to live long life and enjoy as much as they can. And then today, in today's society, as Prabhupada very often pointed out, the atheistic scientists, which give you a blank check, saying that, yeah, we will one day, in the future, sometime, we will, by the scientific advancement, make man immortal. They will be able to stop death. And what Prabhupada said, Vinam Pramatha Kuruteri Karma. That means that when one becomes mad, he speaks such nonsense. Like the child, when he speaks usually nonsense, a small baby, and the parents enjoy. So similarly, when the scientists say this, we know what is Prabhupada's reaction. Because in the history of mankind, we read Bhagavatam, we read all the historical episodes, there has never been that a man has been able to stop that. Even the great demon like Hiranyakashipu was far, far superior than today's advanced technology of scientists. He was a greater atheist and materialistic, Hiranyakashipu. And he made plans to cheat Brahma in so many ways. He asked boons that I will not die this way and that way and this way, and the final word, Krishna appeared as Lord Narasimha and finished. Therefore Krishna says in Bhagavatam, in Bhagavad Gita, that Mudyu Sarva Harashyama, I am death, which is certain, and at the time of death I will take everything, finished. So in this material world, people actually are longing to build up so much of their empire, to accumulate so many things. What's the use? They want to live long life. So Prabhupada says that, okay, supposedly also you are able to prolong your life very long. That's the thing. But then what is the use? Bhagavatam is giving an argument here that trees are also living long. Now, as Prabhupada has pointed the purpose, that there are trees in around the world actually, like he's giving one botanical garden in Calcutta where it's 500, 600 years old. Okay, Prabhupada, the other example of Imrital is a different, it's a different type of a tree, okay, it's actually a Kalpavriksh, which is, just few years ago it has gone back to Godhead, but there's a branch which has come out from there. But anyway, that is a specialty. If we get such a birth, we are perfection of life. Because that tree has existed even at the time of Lord Krishna's pastime and when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to Vrindavan, the same tree was standing. Okay, so that's a different thing. But anyway, the point here is that there are trees, like there are trees in the Californian redwood forest, where it is said that the trees are hundreds and thousands of years old. There are trees which are like more than 7,000 years old still standing. Can we imagine the poor jivatma of that tree is completely enclosed and covered up with his ignorant body, and he's just standing there, simply existing. This is a vivid example of waste of life. So Prabhupada, Bhagavatam here is pointing out, so what's the point? What is so special about living long life? The trees also can live long life. So this particular like tree was existing even before Mahabharata and is still standing. What's the point? So, and people when they want to really like live long life, at the old age, actually, at old age, the people if you see around, their perception is like the trees, completely ignorant. They don't know, they're just lying on the bed, simply existing. They don't know what's happening around, nor who is going in, who is coming out, nothing, simply existing. And then by this advancement of materialist science, there are ways and means of prolonging such life. It's basically actual suffering for that poor soul. But they prolong by machineries and all that, they keep the pumping the heart, they keep circulating the blood and all that stuff, and that particular soul is just simply existing in that body, doing nothing. So what is it? If you compare it as a tree, it's just something similar. The perception is just like a tree. So therefore Bhagavatam actually says, in fact in the same canto, the first chapter, Sukadeva Goswami therefore says that what is the use of this prolonged life, which is simply wasted, inexperienced in so many years. Better to live a moment of full consciousness. Why? Because that will give at least a start in searching one's happiness. So that is, and therefore devotees don't really intend to live long. But what is important for devotees is to live conscious life. And therefore human life is meant for quality, not for quantity. So here Bhagavatam therefore is actually comparing that the trees are also living, so what is the point in living long life? So the example Prabhupada gives in the purport, like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he lived only for 48 years. Shiva Shankaracharya, he lived for 32 years. Jesus Christ lived for only 31 years. So do we remember those trees which are living or still living or which have lived for thousands of years, or do we remember these great souls? Why? Because what have they done for mankind? What have they done for humanity? But these great souls, even though they have lived such a short lifetime, they have actually paved the path for salvation for all of humanity. So therefore we worship them. So that is the difference. Then, suppose just by that saying that, oh okay, the trees also live, but then the argument is that the trees, okay, even though there is life, but they don't breathe. So then Bhagavatam is giving another graphic example. Okay, if you say that the trees don't breathe, which is of course scientifically we know it is wrong, and if they cannot enjoy the facilities as given to a man, so then Bhagavatam is giving the graphic example of the bellows. I don't know how many of you have seen bellows, but usually if you go into a very remote village kind of thing, and there is a blacksmith, he's using his bellow to pump the air into the fire. And the bellow actually is made up of skin, like our skin. Now, our body is made up of skin, and we are also breathing, and the bellow also breathes. So here, Bhagavatam is giving that example. So what? The bellows are also breathing. So what is so exclusive about your breathing? So then, the argument is, oh, okay, no, but the bellows and the trees, they can't eat and enjoy sexual life. So the Bhagavatam then is, okay, just look around. Just look around in your village, in your place. You see the beastly animals, the dogs, the cats, the hogs. Don't they eat? Don't they enjoy sexual intercourse? So, what is so great about that? So that is the example, that is the argument that Bhagavatam puts forth to a materialistic man. And in fact, the trees also have their own ways. Otherwise, how can we see so many trees? The trees have their own way. They breathe in by carbon dioxide and release oxygen. This we know all that. They also eat through the roots. And they also reproduce through the seeds. So they have their own style of activities, and we have been given our own style of activities. But the point here is that the animals that we see around, they also have these facilities. So what is so great about us having these facilities or having these, able to do these activities? So therefore in this modern civilization, Prabhupada points out, there is such a foolish civilization, because by advancement of these activities they think that they are advancing. That is the point that we need to understand here. And in which way we are advancing? There is another very classic point that Prabhupada puts forth, is that if you see around, if you try to compete ourselves or the facilities that is given to us with these lower species like the trees and the animals, we can't compete them. Like if you say, okay, we can live long, as the example is given, the trees are also living so long. Okay, we are enjoying eating. Now for enjoying eating, how much can you enjoy? But look around the hogs. They can eat anything and everything. No discrimination. And actually today in this Kali Yuga, as Kali Yuga is progressing, even human has no discrimination. He also eats anything and everything. You see on this, I don't know, this cartoon channel on Octo, this one advertised game, and they are showing what the snakes and all the venomous things that they are able to eat. So there is no discrimination at all. Anything and everything. So human life is meant for something special. But if you want to do this activity, then it is not good. You will be criticized by doing that. So then, okay, have a body of a hog and just enjoy. Enjoy as much as you want. Nobody is going to harass you. Nobody is going to tell you anything that you are doing wrong. Nobody is going to criticize you. Go and be in the gutters and eat stool or whatever. And have you seen the hogs actually, literally, how they eat and what they eat? If you have gone to Vrindavan or even in some of the villages in India, you will see that. It is such an abominable thing. They will run and fight for stool. You give them halwa, Prabhupada gives the example, very classy example. You give them halwa, they will eat it but very reluctantly. That's tapasya for them. You give them red stool, that's a feast. Big feast. So then be that. Similarly, if you want to live long life, and now today there's in the Western culture, or even now, you compare decades after decades, people want to be more naked. They want to wear short as possible. And in the Western, there is this culture and revolution that naked is just natural. If God wanted us to wear clothes, then He would have made us born with clothes. That is the argument they put. So it's natural to be just naked, just roam around naked. Fine. If you want to do that, human life is not meant for that. It's not good to do that. So eat trees. Stand naked as much as you want. Nobody is going to tell you anything. So every species that we see around, they have a special purpose for it, to fulfill those kind of desires. Then Prabhupada, then here's the example of the sexual intercourse. Now a hog, in 1 year, you know how many children it can produce? 1 dozen. And they can enjoy sexual intercourse like anything. The monkeys, you see the pigeons, like Maharaj gave this example that in the Western, here actually they try and talk, otherwise you'll see so many birds here. Because the pigeons, they can enjoy sexual life in 1 day, I think it's, I don't know how many times they can do. A human being, how many times you can enjoy in a day? You take this medicine, that medicine, how many times you can enjoy? So that is a limitation. But if you want to enjoy that kind of life, then be a bird, be a monkey, be a hog. That is the body that will be given to enjoy those kind of propensities. So therefore this Bhagavatam is giving that example. But see the beasts around, see the animals around. Don't they eat and have sexual intercourse? So what is so excellent about yourself doing that? Then the birds, they can fly so high. Okay, you fly on the airplane, then small thing comes in between and let it crash. The vulture, they can fly so high. But the problem in their flight is that even though like in the example of vulture, they can fly so high, but what are they looking for? Dead body. They have very sharp eyes, they can fly long distances, very high, but what are they looking for? Dead animals, dead bodies. So what is the difference, the greatness about having a human life as compared to this animal life? The only difference is that human life is meant for something higher. That is something meant for self-realization, to be Krishna conscious. That is the only difference. Otherwise, any activity that you take that a human being does, the animals and the lower species can do it far better. Far better. Eating, sleeping, mating, depending, you can talk about any of these activities, there are animals who can do it far, far, far better. You want to sleep 12 hours, 20 hours, there are animals who sleep for 6 months. No problem. Nobody will come and disturb, no Mangala Arati, nothing. So be that. Be that. So therefore, Bhagavatam is giving this very vivid example here. That this is the thing that we need to understand. The importance of the human life. And human life is not so ordinary. It is very rare to get a human being, to get a human birth. Like Maharaj gave this very, another very graphic example that in this human life, people say the highest happiness that they actually, they try to aim for is sexual life. Sexual life is the highest happiness so-called they get. Then Maharaj actually asked this question, that why don't the prostitutes, they actually dance in ecstasy and be happy? If that is so. If sex life can give such a great happiness and bliss to mankind, then the prostitutes will be the happiest people in the earth. But we don't find that. So, therefore, Prabhupada says in the Prabhupada, that therefore human being, we should consider these points. And Prahlad Maharaj says that Adanda Bhobir Vishadam Kamishnam Puna Puna Sarita Sapunana. That is, this is all these activities, it's just like chewing the chew. It is just like chewing the chew. Because in every life, that every form that we get, we have done these activities n number of times. N number of times. Any form of the body or the life that you've taken, eating, sleeping, mating, that has been continuing. The pleasure is the same. The pleasure is the same. You eating a gulab jamun or a halwa and a hog eating a stool, the pleasure is the same. The happiness is the same. So what is so different about it? It is just like trying to squeeze out the sugar cane, every inch of a drop. And in human life, if we try to do that, then it is the most foolish thing to do. Most foolish thing to do. So, all around actually the whole modern civilization is completely so materialistic that the only thing that is being bombarded onto us is how to advance in these activities. how to make more and more sophisticated and luxurious ways of eating, sleeping, mating and defense. That is all. The advertisements, the hoardings, the pictures, the movies, the rock stars, the sings, the songs, everything is just about sex and eating. There's nothing else about that. Why? Because in today's society, the leaders, the politicians, the scientists, the teachers, even the big philosophers, what they argue, there is no life after that. So just enjoy, merry make, eat, sleep, drink and marry. That is their philosophy. They just don't know, and they don't want to even accept any authority. They just construct their own speculation, they construct their own conclusions and live by it. We know Krishna says very clearly in Bhagavad Gita that Dehinosmin Yata Dehi Tomaram Yavanam Jara, that this body, as it moves from boyhood to young age to old age, the soul, the body is changing, but the soul still remains. So similarly, at the point of death, the soul gets transformed into a new body. So it is so simple to understand. And the very graphic example Krishna gives in Bhagavad Gita is about the clothes. Vasamsi Jirani. He says that as our clothes get worn out, what do? We just throw away and put on new garments. So similarly, as this body worns out, the soul actually throws away this body and gets a new body. But that new body that we are going to get, it depends on the activities. If we are inclined to do these kind of activities of only eating, sleeping, mating and defending, then you will get a perfect body to suit your desire. And to be, just do, keep on doing that without any hindrances. But then this, so therefore today's society is therefore known as a very dangerous civilization. It is completely animalistic society. And dangerous because they don't value the human life. They don't value the essence, the purpose of human life. Simply animalistic way. How to increase our eating capacity, how to increase sexual capacity. That is all. So therefore, we have actually distributed the song sheet. So I was just thinking, if we have time, we will sing. Otherwise, I can just read the translation. So therefore, what does Bhaktivinoda Thakur say? Phrase. He sings, Ore man, varo nahi lage, e samsar. That this samsara, this material world, there is nothing good in it. I don't like it. So therefore he is singing this beautiful bhajan. I'll just read the translation first. Listen, my dear mind, I don't like this material world at all. It is simply filled with the suffering of birth, death, disease and old age. Besides all this suffering, tell me now, what good thing could possibly be found here? Wealth, followers and family members, they can never really belong to anyone. For a time they are together, and afterwards they all drift apart. All these relationships which you would love to hold on to, none of them will remain for long, my dear mind. Oh brother, know it for sure that all these temporary things are flimsy and perishable. The lifespan of one living in this world is extremely short. And even that gradually decays more and more until one beholds Yamraj hovering nearby. Afflicted with continuous diseases and lamenting in heartbroken grief, his consciousness thus degrades more and more. Finally one meets his downfall and he again suffers the calamity of separation from his dear kinsmen. Just see here, my dear brother, don't go for this mixed pain and pleasure of so-called material happiness, for it is actually the source of all your troubles. If this is the real situation, then why have you become the slave of Maya just on account of this miserable so-called happiness? Do you realize that what you've done? If you become the slave of Maya, then you only rob yourself of the eternal treasure waiting for you, the supreme goal of life. Just become a little thoughtful for once and reflect back on your own life story. How many demoniac temptations you were motivated by. Simply to get a little sense verification, how many unlimited sinful acts have you committed? So now just see the results. The only gain in the long run is your certain death. Alas, never having once considered the purpose or goal of human existence, such a person wastes his entire life just like a dog or a pig. Then at the time of death, being bereft and cheated out of any means of deliverance, he laments bitterly and burning the fire of repentance. My dear mind, so tell me, why you remain stupefied and unconscious, absorbed in this useless temporary sense gratification? I want you to give it up right now and give up all hopes for future sense gratification as well. For the expectation of this humble servant is that you will be able to conquer over this miserable material existence by being firmly situated under the protection offered by the lotus feet of Sri Guru, your most well-wishing spiritual master. So should we sing this song?
Ore man malu nahi lage samsar,
ore man malu nahi lage samsar,
janam marana jate samsare ache bhat sahib ache bolasa,
janam marana
Nana jana pariva kehu nahi prabhu ka sarne ka sare aapa, जहाँ रखने वाले चाहे कहना है चाहे ना अनेक्य समस्त विवाह
Yeah.
Actually used to say the famous line that this material world is not for gentlemen. And this point we should imbibe thoroughly in our heart and in our mind at every moment. That from this purport, as it points out, that there are so many materialistic around us, this whole world in fact, the way it is going, that they believe is be happy, enjoy, and marry me. Why? Because there is no life after that. So as much as these foolish people of this material world are convinced that there is no life after that, we as devotees should be more convinced that life is so abominable without Krishna consciousness. So in other words, what I am trying to say is that don't be impressed. Don't be impressed with this material world, the advancement of this material world. There is nothing to be impressed about. Be impressed by the great souls that we read in Bhagavatam. Be impressed of Prabhupada. Be impressed by the spiritual masters. Be impressed by our great acharyas. Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, they were big ministers. They were so far advanced. What did they do? They gave up everything. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he showed in his own life, he was the greatest scholar. He had so much of name, fame. What did he do? He gave up everything. So they are showing by their own examples. The Lord Himself is coming to deliver us, and He is renouncing His own dear wife, His own widowed mother, for what? Just to proclaim, just to reclaim these conditioned souls, just to reclaim us. And we are, instead of looking at that end, we want to look at the advancement. We are getting impressed by our neighbors. We are getting impressed by our colleagues. So please, stick to this. So this is very important to remember. And therefore, once a lady asked Srila Prabhupada, that what is the most important thing in life? Prabhupada said very simply, to identify yourself. That is the most important thing. To know who you are. Because if you identify with this body, then everything is finished. Everything is finished. That is the only exclusive rights that has been given to a human being. A dog on the street is not able to ask, who am I? Am I a dog or something else? And if a human being doesn't come to the point of asking this question, then what is he? So therefore, why? Because that is the exclusive rights given to the human life. So therefore Prabhupada said that to identify oneself, that is the most important thing. And therefore in the purport, it is said that the human life is therefore meant to utilize time and energy in discussing the theosophical and geological arguments of who am I, from where am I coming, what is the purpose of life, what happens after death. What is my highest goal of life? What is my highest perfection? How to achieve it? What are the impediments to achieve that? And how to overcome these impediments? These are the questions that only a human being can ask. Not a dog or a hog or a tree. So therefore living long life and eating and having sexual intercourse is nothing excellent on human life, on part of the human life. Unless and until he comes to this point, the Bhagavatam Jigyasa. So unless, okay, we can say as devotees, should we give up everything? No, okay, some energy is required to be utilized in these activities, eating, sleeping, but again for a purpose. But the problem is that the influence of this material world is such that the, all of the energy is being utilized in these activities, as if they are all in all. This is the end and the end all, the beginning and the end of all. So that is the problem. We should be, as devotees, should be able to utilize or should minimize the energies in utilizing these activities and maximize our energies in trying to awaken our dormant nature, our dormant identity. And that is known as self-realization. And the perfection of this science of self-realization is when we awaken our dormant, eternal love and relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. And therefore it is said, Samajindaye Pada Pallava Klavam, Mahatpadam Yashomaraj, Padam Padam, Pavamgore Vatsa Padam Padam Padam, Padam Padam Yadri Padam Desham. That only when you come and take shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna, then this whole unsurmountable ocean of material existence just become like a water in a glass of friend. Just like a puddle. Then we will not be influenced by these material worlds. Unless and until we take complete shelter in the lotus feet of Guru and Acharya and Krishna, we will always, time to time, moment to moment, Maya will always influence us. Maya will always give us a lot of reasons to get influenced in the wrong way. Unless we are completely convicted, convinced and determined, this will happen. So therefore it is said that unless one takes shelter, this whole material ocean, which is unfathomable, unsurmountable, which nobody can cross over, then that becomes like just a puddle. That means it becomes so insignificant. Insignificant. But only for those who have completely taken shelter. The moment we are little bit haywire here and there, Maya creeps in and Maya will give us all kind of justifications to give one moment to her. And we know, you give one moment, that one moment will multiply into 10 moments, that 10 moments will multiply into 10 weeks, into months, into years. And by the time you have even not noticed it, you will be on the deathbed. And then you will think, what have I done my whole life? Maybe I will keep chanting, but that's not all in all. The quality, the consciousness, how much? Because that is what is important. At the time of death, when Yamaraj or even God forbid that we all don't have to go see Yamaraj, but even at the point of death, how long we have lived is not of no credit. It's no credit. Nobody is going to congratulate, oh, you lived 70 years, oh, you lived 100 years, congratulations. No. But only the quality of the consciousness is going to matter at that point of time. And then everybody will have to go through that. There's no exception to that. So therefore, this human life is meant exclusively for Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, he is human only in name. And therefore, we need to put this focus, because there are 99.999% of people around us in this world who don't have this sin, who don't have this goal in mind. They are influencing all of them that this is not the goal of life, this is not natural, this is abnormal to do this. But we need to focus. And therefore Prabhupada actually in one of the purposes in Chaitanya Charitamrita, he says very nicely this, that the bestial civilization of eating, sleeping, fearing and sense gratifying has misled modern man into forgetting how powerful a soul he has. The soul is a spiritual spark many, many times more illuminating, dazzling and powerful than the sun, moon or electricity. I'll repeat that. The soul is a spiritual spark many, many times more illuminating, dazzling and powerful than the sun, moon and electricity. human life is spoiled when man does not realize his real identity with his soul. Can you imagine what a loss? What a loss. If you tell Bill Gates, oh, you are going to lose hundreds of billions of dollars, he may repent. But when we say this, that you are losing your life, what is the big deal? That is the condition in this world. So if we get influenced by that, then we lose our aim, we lose the whole focus. Even though one may be very learned and wise, he is mad. If he does not understand that the endeavor for sense gratification, this is Rishabhdev actually telling in Srimad Bhagavatam 5.57. Even though one may be very learned and wise, he is mad if he does not understand that the endeavor for sense gratification is a useless waste of time. Being forgetful of his own interest, he tries to be happy in the material world, centering his interest on his home, which is based on sexual intercourse, and which brings him all kinds of material miseries. In this way, one is no better than a foolish animal. So therefore, even our acharyas, Narottam Das Thakur, what does he say? Hari Hari Vipale Janamaganayinu Radha Krishna Nadhajiya. What is that? Manushya Janamayapaya Radha Krishna Nadhajiya Janiya Vishaya Janiya Suniya Vishakayinu. But after having this material life, after having this human life, I have not worshipped Radha and Krishna. And therefore, I have willingly volunteered to drink poison. Radha and Krishna. So even Bhaktivinoda Thakur has sung a very beautiful song. Do we have time? Can we sing the other song also? I will take another half an hour if devotees are willing to do. Go on. Otherwise, we'll skip the bhajan. Bhaktivinoda Thakur has sung this beautiful song where he says, what is the other song that I have actually? It's on the same page. Next slide. Durlabha Manava. I'll read the translation. Let me see. The human form of life is the rarest opportunity for attaining spiritual perfection. But now I am lamenting because I somehow or other been born with such an opportunity and I wasted it by never worshipping Lord Krishna. Oh, to whom shall I tell the tale of this misery? Having married and entered into the entanglements of materialistic family life, I passed my time in vain. I never got any tangible gain or permanent benefit, only trouble and botheration. What kind of world is this anyway? It seems to me just like a magic lantern, just like a magic lantern show that I saw at the carnival, wherein so many shadows and optical illusions dance magically before my eyes. I feel great attachment and identification with such a world, and thus day after day pass by fruitlessly without any purpose whatsoever. When this body drops dead on the ground, then what will remain mine? At that moment, all of my sons and dearest loved ones will not be able to give me any happiness. I work hard, just like an ass, every day, and now I am wondering, for whom am I working so hard? I am still surrounded by so many illusions. I waste every day in useless, insignificant work, and I waste every night controlled by sleep. And in every 24 hours, I never for one second consider that cruel death is sitting near, very close by my side. I live a very carefree lifestyle, sometimes eating a lot or eating a little if I feel like it. Sometimes I see nice things around the town, or sometimes I don't go out at all. Sometimes I wear opulent clothing, or if I am in the mood, I wear something simple. I live so carefree that I never consider that one day I will have to give up this body. My poor heart is plagued by constant anxieties about the maintenance and daily turmoil created by my body, my house, my wife, my family members and my social obligations. All these anxieties are pinching me and destroying all my intelligence. Alas, alas, what a remorseful situation has arisen. I am absorbed in all this trouble, but I never consider that all these things are temporary and subject to perish very soon. After I am dead and gone, where will all of my material occupancy remain? When my body will be thrown in the pit at the cremation grounds, it will simply lie there motionless. Then many crows, vultures, ants and worms will come and playfully sport there. All the stray dogs and jackals will then become very much delighted, and in great ecstasy they will make a festival ground out of my body and will have a huge celebration and feast. Just see, this is the ultimate destination of this material body. And the most amazing thing is that all of my material opulences, house, family and friends are exactly the same destination. Therefore I ask of anyone who has any sharp intelligence, please give up all of these temporary illusions presented by Maya and kindly search after the means to get pure devotion to Lord Krishna, for this is the only really tangible eternal truth. It is like our own life in front of us. If we are not focused, if we lose even a moment, therefore Krishna consciousness is over, that every moment we have to be conscious of Krishna. That is the trouble. So we'll sing this or we skip it? We sing, I'll take half an hour more for the consciousness. Actually, I don't know whether it happened a coincidence or it is by the Lord's will, that most often when I am giving class, it is at somebody's house. And even though I don't want to give long classes, but somehow the purport that Prabhupada or that comes in front of me has so many things that I just can't, leave it. So today's purport, as I said, it is so heavy. It is so heavy, and Prabhupada is talking about so many things. So we'll try and cover a few more points that Prabhupada has pointed after this bhajan.
Yeah. Thank you.
So that is the topsy-turvy today. So therefore, as Prabhupada points, the human life is meant for tapasya. And this actually has been established by the Supreme Lord Himself. Like we read in Bhagavatam that before anything was created, Brahma was born, not knowing anything, where he is, who he is, not understanding anything, what to be done. And the only thing Krishna reveals to the world through Brahmaji is what? Two syllables, tapa. So that's the first thing that Krishna has given actually in his material world, in his manifestation, tapa. So therefore tapasya means, and for us as devotees, when we hear about tapasya, all that, tapasya doesn't mean sitting in the fire for 10 hours or, you know, or sitting in the cold or whatever. It, for us, it is very simple. Rupa Goswami has stated what is tapasya for us. To accept whatever is favorable for Krishna consciousness, to reject what is unfavorable. That is as simple as that. Of course, saying is simple, doing is not as simple. But the philosophy, the focus is that one punchline. In all that we do, in all these activities, even in the activities of eating, sleeping, mating and defending. So, according to the Varna Ashram, to do our prescribed duties with the goal to please Krishna. That is what is stated in Bhagavatam. Correct? Atha Pumbir Vita Shreshtha Varna Ashram Vibhagasa Sanuskritasya Dharmasya Sam Siddhi Hari Toshna. So that is our goal in life, Sam Siddhi Hari Toshna. Anything and everything we do, it is with the goal of Sam Siddhi Hari Toshna, just pleasing Hari. Therefore, tapasya means to give up our false ego, putting Krishna in the center of our lives, to follow rules and regulations given by the acharyas, and to purify our heart by intense, sincere chanting, with a humble mood of serving Krishna, Guru and the Vaishnavas. This chanting and service, this is actual tapasya for us. That's the yuga dharma anyway. But that is the actual tapasya for us. To get more and more intense and sincere chanting. And with a humble mood, with a service mood. With these two things, one will be able to realize everything. One can read a lot of scriptures, one can study a lot of things, can recite a lot of shlokas, can learn a lot of things, can meditate. But if he has not these two things, nothing will be realized. So that is tapasya for us. To get ourselves intensely chanting, sincere chanting, to take shelter of Harina, and with the service attitude. So these two things is the key pillars for our devotional service. So therefore, tapasya means to be conscious of Krishna every moment and to be cautious of Maya. Prabhupada said to the Western disciples that you are very enthused in devotional service. You are doing very good in devotional service. The only problem is you are not fearful of Maya. So that is we have to keep in mind. Because Maya is so strong, Daivi Eshagunamaya. It is so strong because it can come under, it can influence a devotee under the guise of devotional service. Even. So that is why we have to be so careful, so cautious of it. So these two things, with the association with devotees actually, will keep us fixed. Will keep us fixed. Even though we come under the influence of Maya, sooner or later we will be able to realize that. Sooner than later, I would say. So tapasya means therefore to be conscious and to say no to the temptation of Maya. So therefore Mahaprabhu has given us two shlokas. That is what tapasya means to us. Trinadapi sunichena karuravi sahishmana amani namana dina kaniya sadahari. That is the first step. And the second step is to say no. Na dhanam, na janam, na sundarim, kavitam vajika dashikame. Nama janmani janmani ishware, bhavata gahi, kriya vishwari. So these two things are tapasya for us. And therefore it is said that Mahaprabhu, in Jagannath Chandra, it is said that Mahaprabhu came to teach us there three things. Vairagya, Vidya, Nija, Bhakti Yoga. First thing is Vairagya, which means to say no to the illusory promises of Maya. And the second thing is vidya, means to cultivate knowledge of what? Of to understand and discriminate between the truth and illusion, between matter and spirit, between things which are really going to give us happiness or going to give us misery. So therefore, to read Prabhupada's books is very important. And bhakti, the nine processes of devotional service, among which chanting the foremost. And it is said actually that for one, depending to the degree that one is attached enthusiastically to the holy name and to the service attitude, to that degree one is advanced. It determines one's advancement in spiritual life. So tapasya for us should be that irrespective of whatever we feel, irrespective of whatever problems we may have, we should be enthusiastic to chant the holy names, to serve the devotees. That is tapasya for us. Because one point we need to understand is that it is very easy to get attracted to Maya. But to get attracted to Krishna, it may take one whole lifetime of a sadhana. I repeat this. To get attracted to Maya is very easy. But to get attracted to Krishna, it may take a whole lifetime of one sadhana. And so we have to show this to Krishna, that we really want you. When we show that in our endeavor of chanting, of service, of devotional, and whatever devotional activities we are doing, then Krishna will surely give us his shelter. He will surely protect us from the downfall as well. But that endeavor has to come. So that is tapasya for us. So we should keep this in mind, that our only focus therefore should be not to get attracted to these material illusory things and not to get impressed by it, but rather our focus should be how to deepen our attachment in our sadhana, in the holy name, how to take more and more shelter in the holy name. That is tapasya for us. And Mahaprabhu has given this form of tapasya which is so joyful. It is so joyful. It is chanting, dancing and feasting in association of the devotees. So thank you very much. If devotees have any questions, comments. Today we are fortunate to have a lot of senior devotees as well among us. So questions are welcomed.
So you read from the Prabhupada Nectar, you quoted Jagdish Goswami's words that although the work may be, what was the word that we used to forget? Incomplete. Incomplete. Use something like
that.
Imperfectly composed. Why does he say that?
Imperfectly composed, what, Prabhupada Bhagavatam or?
This is what he's saying. The translation I took with what he's
saying. This is with my limited understanding of Prabhupada is saying correctly. When he said that initially the limited, imperfectly composed, it doesn't mean that it was imperfectly composed in the essence. It was imperfectly composed in terms of some grammatical things, which there were editors and all that to do that. But not in the sense that the message was different or the message was wrong. That is what it means in my limited capacity. And actually if you compare also, I mean now probably it may be difficult to get the whole copy, even Bhagavad Gita, because Prabhupada when he wrote Bhagavad Gita, he actually wrote first copy, which of course got stolen. But then the second copy also he was using the dictaphones and writing that. So when you see as a whole, you may find your medical errors. I would just give one example on that. Rupa Goswami, I think he was writing Lalita Madhav, or I think that was what he was writing then. No, sorry, not Lalita Madhav, Nectar of Devotion, right? Nectar of Devotion. And Vallabhacharya comes at that time. He was a very senior devotee, Vallabhacharya, right? If I'm not wrong. So he comes to meet Rupa Goswami. And Rupa Goswami, out of his humility, he gives that book to Vallabhacharya to correct it. And Vallabhacharya, in fact, finds mistake. But it was Zero Goswami, who was very young, who was under the shelter of Rupa Goswami. He actually argues, not in argues, but in fact he presents the facts. And the Vallabhacharya says that, yes, this is completely perfect. It's nothing wrong with that. So, when we say imperfectly composed, it also means from the point of view of the reader. Right? If I don't understand the law of physics and I am reading a physics book, I'll say everything is wrong. I don't understand this. Right? So it also means from the other side. But okay, in this term, I can just say that yes, there, you will find that there are differences, like the latest edition of Bhagavad Gita you see and the old edition, which was also a very abridged edition. You may find grammatical points, but the theme, the message is not different.
And then
Prabhupada's mentioned statement here, very strong statement. Program life without spiritual value is not very important. So, we see in practical life, some of our near and dear relatives, maybe devotees or non-devotees, they get some terminal diseases and they are in ICU. And practically there is no hope, medically speaking, for them. So, the more money we spend to keep them in ICU with artificial instruments, their life will get prolonged. But when we stop that supply, their life is more or less safe. So in that situation, what should be our decision or approach? And if same thing happens to us, that we are in that situation, and we know that we are just depending on external factors, our life is more or less already over. But others are putting money and prolonging our suffering, so what should be our decision?
I would request devotees to answer this. Very nice question. Very practical question.
Prabhu, this is an ethical issue which very often comes in medical debates when we are talking about euthanasia.
Right.
And we are trying to prolong the life on mechanical ventilation. What we understood at that time is that we were debating the ethics of, you know, trying to do mercy killing. We understand from this that you know, we have to be paying for our past karma, so we have to endure it. We do not have a right to take our own life or somebody else's life, even though we might be spending extra resources on it. But then at all points, you know, we are supposed to pay for our bliss. And it said that the suffering that we endure through all this is of that means that our karma is actually getting exhausted by suffering for what we have done. So that is my understanding.
Good from doctor's point of view.
Yeah, doctors want to do a mercy killing program. They don't want to prolong life, but what we understand from Shastra is something else, that we have to endure that suffering, not that we have to take our life. So I'm not giving a doctor view, but doctors would not want to keep someone on a ventilator. They just know it's dying, let him die. So doctors do otherwise.
I want to ask, sir, brain dead, you know the situation. If the people are brain dead, if the brain dead suffering, the brain dead cannot understand anything. Then what is the situation? And another second, somebody wanted to give their life, they stop food, drink, everything, eating, and then literally by day, that's a particular Jainism. There are sadhus, 60 days, 80 days, 90 days, then they go to temple. What is that? Is that correct or not?
Anybody want to answer that? First question of Sri Ramu Bhagavu, that is it correct to prolong one's life who is on deathbed for a devotee and from a non-devotee perspective? Now, first thing we need to understand that we are not in the control of anything. Yeah, you can kill a person and say, yeah, I am in control. But that has implications, and that also happens for a reason. So as Prabhupada pointed out that yes, there is karma which obviously plays a big factor, not just for that soul, but for the people who are associated with that soul. It is the united karma that they have to face. So the person is suffering, but actually more suffering is happening to the relatives. They are working on more money, even though they may want to kill them. In today's world and society, you know, we have seen people who just actually curse. It's better that he dies or she dies, you know. But then, that is the collective karma that they also have to face that. It is said, actually, I don't remember where I read it or where I heard it, but it is said that if the karma is bad, then even the son born in a child, in the family, will be, because of the karma, he will be the past enemy. And he gets birth as a son for the father to take away everything in this life. Okay? So that is all implications of karma, and that is intricate to understand. But from a devotee's perspective, if you are saying that, oh, a devotee is dying, from a devotee's perspective, I am on a deathbed, obviously I don't want others to suffer. That is the first point. So from my perspective, it is better that I would leave my body faster, sooner than later. That's from the person who is dying. But from a devotee's perspective, from their relatives, they are also devotees obviously, then they understand that because this soul who is residing in that body actually has done devotional service, this body itself is not just simply material body. So that's why we have so many samadhis. Why do we have so many samadhis of the material body, of the devotees? Because that body itself becomes like a sakshat temple. Therefore we have samadhi. So we, as devotees, we will obviously want to have a devotee, even though he is not deathbed, to live as long as possible. Or that is again Krishna's hand. So there we will not do like mercy killing or anything. In fact, mercy killing itself is a wrong concoction that has been come about. Because as we read in Bhagavatam, that there is a specific duration for a soul to live in that body. Specific, not just duration, but the number of breathings also it takes. That has been already decided, destined based on the karma. And if somebody tries to violate that natural rule and law, then, you know, he has to then suffer. The spirit also has to suffer. He doesn't get another body. He has to suffer, and that's why Prabhupada gives the concept of the ghost. So ghosts exist because of one of these reasons, that they are prematurely killed. Now, the other question of Rahuji was on the brain, whose brain is dead. Now there again, from medical terms point of view, they can say, yeah, okay, there is no point in the person to live longer. And they actually give a death certificate, I think, based on that. And there are cases also that they have given death certificate that, yeah, the brain has ceased to function. So, again, that from medical trauma point of view, it may be correct, because when the brain ceases, actually the body dies, but it may take a prolonged time or it may take short time, depends. So, from a devotee's perspective, the answer for both the question is that we shouldn't be the cause of that soul leaving the body before its duration. And Prabhuji also talked about Jainism question, that people pass voluntarily to give up the body. Okay, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita about the austerities, one is supposed to do. If you do austerities which are harmful for the body, then that is no good. Very clear actually it is there. So, in that perspective, from a Krishna conscious perspective, it is not good, it is not correct. Yes, we have tapasya, we have austerities, but again, when we are doing the austerity, if the center, if the goal is to achieve Krishna consciousness with that tapasya, then that is beneficial for the soul. Because at the end of the day, it is, as Krishna says, that whatever tapasya you do, if you are doing it for me, then you are coming back to me. But if he is doing for achieving something which is, I mean, Jainism is basically Vaidism. It is on a Brahman platform, to say. I don't know much about Jainism philosophy, but it is something like that. In fact, Bhagavan Prabhupada says it's actually not even a religion. But anyway, but they have their own means, they have their own values, and they have some of their goals to achieve. But from a Krishna's perspective or from Krishna's philosophy, austerity, if it is done for Krishna, then it is correct. Otherwise, it is not correct. That means it is just like a torture for the body. So then that is not correct.
So I would like to add here that mercy killing is almost a similar situation as a suicide. Because if you think that adhyatmic klesh is sufferings which are happening because of the body or because of your mind. So while this might be a, people commit suicide in case of emotional suffering, and here you're committing it because of a bodily suffering. There's no, practically no much difference in this. You're just doing it prematurely, misusing your freedom.
From a natural standpoint, if you ask anybody, do you want to die? The answer will be
no.
No. Howsoever you may be suffering, the attachment to the body and to the things around is not so easy to give up. There are people who go through dialysis every day, every month. You ask them, do you want to die? That's why in this world it is said, people want to live long. People want to live long.
So at those times people want to. In those sufferings, but they just have to endure.
Yeah.
I mean, they see it as a means of salvation, but
that is, yes, that is to get rid of the sufferings.
Right.
That is to get rid of the sufferings, not otherwise. But that is also a point which is beyond a very, you know, it is really literally a beyond somebody to endure that kind of suffering.
The form of quality of the devotees to have mercy. The foremost quality of the devotee is to have mercy at heart for all living entities. So this question itself is becomes redundant on that aspect. And also, whether materialist, two-legged, four-legged, whatsoever, a devotee is supposed to show compassion. So in that sense, there is no question of mercy killing or doing it to oneself, which is, as what Prabhu mentioned, Sri Sai. So, if one is situated in proper Krishna consciousness, then he acts according to his status of a devotee. He actually exhibits mercy and tries his very best to save every living entity. And if at all someone, you know, is thinking about committing suicide or killing someone else, or even for that matter, performing extreme tapasya, then as Prabhuji mentioned, Krishna says, for one who touches the body and the super soul within, I personally consider him as a rakshasa.
So it's not mercy killing, we just stop paying for your IQ charges.
That charge is also going in because of your karma.
I'm sorry, the budget of the clarify. Because most of the answers given pertaining to killing is something adding artificially.
Right.
But from what I understand of Prabhu's question, keeping them alive is artificial because they are naturally dead. We are trying to artificially keep them alive. They are going against the laws of nature.
No, but
that's
not the body.
So, but if it is natural, they are going to. Isn't that what Prabhupada only said?
The question is, if you are able to do that, then people would not die. even in spite of doing, even in spite of trying with all these mechanisms to keep that body alive, finally the soul leaves. Finally the soul leaves. It's not that they are able to do it eternally, isn't it? We have seen those days. So that is what we are trying to say, that the natural, when that time will come, the pre-destroying time will come, when the soul will leave.
And so then no intervention is mechanical. Even when we see in Jayaprakash Maharaj Swami case, that you know that he would not have survived without mechanical ventilation for even 24 hours. But if he has been brought up to this point, it's because of assisted ventilation only.
So,
But we are giving him medicines and keeping him alive. So this comes kind of situation. So we need to keep our medicine. So our Bhakti Maharaj realizations on this are very beautiful.
I think this is going to be another 2 hours now. So I think better stop here. So if you want to discuss on that philosophy, you can have another session, private session. Okay. Thank you very much.
You talked about Narasingh Maharaj's appearance, Narasingh Dev's appearance, and you talked about Petrak Shapu's killing.
So there I want to understand that when he is given a boon, Petrak Shapu is given a boon, so a sensible man would normally keep it very closed and not open it. He is elaborating on everything, that not a beast, not a man, respect. The simplest boon would have been to ask, I want to be innocent. He adds so many things because it gives...
I cannot give that. Okay. I cannot give that. I myself is not my model. How can I give you that?
Then the moment he creates those conditions, then you know that
therefore he tries to create those conditions. To try to get that...
What I want to ask is that, is that setting up a stage for Leela later on? As we understand,
it is ultimately, because even Kashyapu is none other than Jai Vijay. So it is the state, but it is also to teach the world, the people of this world, you know, that this is not possible. You try this way, that way, that this is not even just Ivan Kashyapu. I will tell you, I think there was another demon who actually said, very simple, I will not be killed by anything liquid, anything solid. I don't remember the demon's name. Namuchi. So he said that I will not be able, give me a boon that I will not be able to kill anything with liquid or anything solid. And the Lord kills him with what, you know, with foam.
So why does he leave me?
Yeah, because that, see, the demons, they will try to conquer their mind in that way, but it is not possible.
So, but why does he eliminate gas? We all know that.
That is again, Krishna says, no, I give you the forgetfulness, I give you the intelligence also.
So they are ignorant. Okay. Generally, demons are ignorant.
Very good. Thank you very much. Jai Shri Prabhupada ki, Ananda Bodhi Vaishnavinda ki.
Jai Shri Rajesh Prabhuji ki.
Ananda Bodhi Vaishnavinda ki.